Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Setting the record straight on inflation, why costs are going up, and more importantly, how to fix it. The growth in unionizing, a third Apple store now in the mix. And today on the show, the iron workers in Alabama and the United Labor Agency. Welcome to the Wednesday, May 4th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on at least six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. Jeb Miles is going to be our first guest on the show. He is a newcomer to America's workforce. He's a fourth-generation union tradesman, first-generation iron worker, comes from a family of carpenters. He was initiated into local 477's apprenticeship. This is the iron workers' apprenticeship. This was in May of 2001, topped out as a journeyman in September of 2003, and he worked mostly as a welder, turbine, and heavy rigger at hydro powerhouses throughout the Tennessee Valley. Boy, that area is exploding right now. Ironworkers477.org is their website, and he's based in Sheffield, Alabama. We've been doing a lot checking in with various union brothers and sisters in the South and Southeast. Yesterday, we talked to one of the bricklayers in Augusta, Georgia. That was Glenn Kelly. That was a fun show. And the more we learn about that area, the more we find out that there's a lot of job opportunities. And that's exactly what Jeb is going to talk about, the apprenticeship and training that's going on over there. We'll get into organizing, reasons for non-union iron workers and contractors to organize. We'll get into the politics and all this. We're really going to delve into their apprenticeship program and the training center. Training center is fascinating. They get into OSHA, first aid, foreman training, rigging training. They've got 18 welding booths. There's a mock-up, and he'll talk in detail about this structural mock-up with stairs and decking that the apprentices have to go through, forklifts, boom trucks, all of that. The membership of the iron workers. For members, they offer a world-class apprenticeship program, continuing education, and a unified voice advocating for fair wages and safe working conditions. This is a very dangerous profession, let's be honest here. So safety, 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 it's so important. And the union overall, the iron workers, invest heavily in their members. Get this, International spends more than $90 million a year on training. A year. That's a lot of change. All right, so Jeb Miles is going to be our first guest. Later in the show, we're going to check in with Dave Meganhart. Dave is executive director of the United Labor Agency. You hear me talk about them on the show all the time, ulagency.org. This is an organization that was formed in Cleveland, Ohio, back in 1971. And they had a lot of help from the Cleveland AFL-CIO, the UAW, and the Teamsters. And they have changed over the years. Right now, they focus on workforce development, assisting unemployed, and more importantly, the underemployed. There's a lot of people that are probably qualified for better paying jobs, and sometimes they need extra training. Well, ULA connects all the dots on that. We'll talk about a virtual career fair. They've been doing a lot of these. And, of course, that started during the pandemic. And the nice thing about that, you have a pretty broad audience. We'll get into that. We'll talk about the job market. There's jobs at the Regional Transit Authority, also in county government. So Dave will run all of that down as our second guest on the show. Got to give a salute here to the National AFL-CIO. And they decided to set the record straight on inflation. Now, if you watch the media, it's all Biden's fault. It's all Biden's fault. Gas prices, Biden's fault. War in Ukraine, Biden's fault. Well, in 2021, prices went up by 7.1%. And these costs are eating into our paychecks. And you don't see 7.1, 7.2, 7.3% pay hikes. That's not happening. Not happening. Wages have been stuck for decades. So the AFL-CIO created a flyer. If you go to the website, aflcio.org, you could download it. And I'm encouraging all the locals that listen to do this. This flyer lays out the real reasons for the skyrocketing cost of living. And more importantly, what you can do about it. Now, let me just go over a little bit. From groceries to gas, higher prices are taking a toll on working families. Number one, disrupted supply chains. The pandemic disrupted our supply chains that were focused on squeezing out more corporate profits instead of being resilient. Number one, overseas manufacturing. With much of the manufacturing being overseas, supply disruptions are even more painful and vulnerable to international events. Now we're seeing that change. You're seeing companies leaving China. Well, they may not leave them all together, but they're setting up shop in the United States. Intel, for one. There's various cities. We're going to talk more about that this Friday with Dorsey Hager on that facility that they're planning in central Ohio. Then there's corporate greed. Corporate profits are at record highs. And billionaires, get this, billionaires added $2 trillion to their wealth during the pandemic. Not billion, trillion. Even as oil prices come down, gas prices have stayed high. Big corporations are squeezing working families. So Wall Street gets richer. Okay? Supply chains, overseas manufacturing, corporate greed. Now, how do we fix it? Number one, upgrade our infrastructure. And we're about to do that. We need to complete repairs and construction to our bridges, roads, and ports to make our supply chain stronger and prevent disruptions. Makes sense, right? American manufacturing, that's number two. We need to bring manufacturing jobs back home to create good union jobs and shorten our supply chains. Keywords there, good union jobs. And lastly, higher wages. We also need to raise wages so that working people can afford everyday necessities. Workers organizing can check corporate greed and help build a more fair economy. So the AFL-CIO, if you go to that website, they're asking you to comment on all this. What else matters to you? Go to aflcio.org/member survey. Let me repeat that. aflcio.org/member survey. And you could chime in. And, hey, tell it like it is. It's what it's all about. That's what this show is all about. Why are costs going up? How do we fix it? Chime in on the conversation. Well, the labor movement goes on as unionization drives continue. As you probably heard, and we talked about this briefly yesterday, the Amazon union was unable to secure a union vote at the second Staten Island warehouse. That vote came down on Monday. It was almost 2-1 against. Now, the union, ALU, they call themselves, says they will only fight harder and plan to turn their attention to contract negotiations. Now, Amazon has challenged the results of the first union vote. They won that by 55%. And an ALJ, administrative law judge, recently granted a hearing for their objection, saying there could be grounds for overturning those results. You knew this was going to happen. You knew this. Amazon may also put off contract talks and weaken enthusiasm and momentum by spending years in court challenges to fighting the union. I mean, that's basic procedure for corporate America. In the meantime, there's some good things happening in the country. Unionization drives continue as a Apple store in Maryland becomes the third Apple store to launch a unionization drive. Workers there are organizing to form a union because they want more local control over hours, better health and safety conditions, and better pay. And check this, the New York Times this week released a report on the growth of unionizing efforts, drawing parallels to moments in history when unions were at their peak, including the 1930s. If you go back in the labor history, you'll see a lot of organizing going on. Why? People were in the middle of the Great Depression. You couldn't buy a job. And if you had a job, you were paid peanuts. That's where the unions started organizing. The Committee of Interns and Residents reports that residents at Stanford Health, voted in an overwhelming majority to join the union, which already represents over 20,000 doctors nationwide. That's interesting. And Local 689, the union representing DC circulator drivers, announced that they would be going on strike following a breakdown in negotiations with the transportation company over family and medical leave, discipline, as well as wages. Now, Liz Shuler, president of the AFL-CIO, is chiming in on all the organizing that's going on. And she put it bluntly, unions are back. For those of us who have long fought for working people, the recent triumphs of the labor movement's David over corporate Goliaths are exciting. Winning a union and the power to negotiate is a powerful tool. The good news is there's much more that can be done to bring more into the movement and to build more effective vehicles to guarantee worker rights. Campaigns at Amazon, Starbucks, New York Times, Raven Software, and so many other companies prove that agility, creativity, and community are powerful organizing forces, and they are not alone in reshaping the playbook of the modern labor movement. Liz summed it up this way. A union starts and ends with people. Amen to that. And one more here. Hats off to the Postal Workers Union, the American Postal Workers Union, APWU.org is their website. Members are coming together for a historic and ambitious organizing effort. Their goal is to add 5,000 new members in post offices across the country. While corporate giants continue their efforts to privatize the Postal Service, the union has something else planned, growing worker power, to keep America's Postal Service in public hands. So, recently, APW members gathered online for a virtual organizing seminar, and the drive began on Sunday. We'll have to get them back on the show to talk about that. That's a lofty goal. 5,000 new members. All right, we have to break. When we come back, we're going to check in with the iron workers in Sheffield, Alabama.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland at 216-881-1802. Call Music Talent of Cleveland as your dependable source for professional musicians in Northeast Ohio. Union musicians add harmony to weddings, elegance to parties, and uplifting music for all events. Music Talent of Cleveland contracts solo and ensemble musicians as well as bands and orchestras for single engagements. So hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland today. 216-881-1802.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialist, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is AWF Union Podcast, AWF Union Podcast. Before we get to our first guest, I just want to do a shout out here to my brothers and sisters at the Laborers International Union of America. They're our presenting sponsor, of course, but this is the local in St. Louis County, Missouri. The members there have won legislation upgrading apprenticeship requirements on projects valued at more than $75,000, which helps to ensure top-notch training, quality construction, and new opportunities for workers. The Missouri-Kansas Laborers District Council celebrated their victory, and they tweeted, "St. Louis County Bill Number 8 is a big win for union workers. Our apprenticeship program is world-class. Our union apprenticeship program ensures top-notch training that helps keep workers safe. And our craftsmanship saves taxpayer dollars." That's what it's all about. Save taxpayer dollars, keep workers safe, keep them happy, get the wages up there, get the benefits up there, and you got a good area. So hats off to St. Louis County, Missouri, and our brothers and sisters at LIUNA. LIUNA.org is the national website. We appreciate their presenting sponsorship here on America's Workforce for so many years now. All right, let's go down to Sheffield, Alabama. Joining us on line number one right now is Jeb Miles. Jeb is the business manager for Iron Workers Local 477. They have about 300 active workers. Ironworkers477.org is their website. Jeb Miles, welcome to the show. How are we doing today, my brother?
Pretty good. How about you?
Good, 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 good. Alabama, central, northern, where? What part of Alabama are you in?
So we're in the northwest corner of, when we cover basically the northern half of Alabama, but Sheffield is located in the northwest corner. Probably familiar with Muscle Shoals from, hit recording capital of the world back in the 50s and 60s. That's right in our backyard.
Okay. It's a little bit before my time, but
Muscle Shoals, Leonard Skinner sings about it. That's
Okay. Yeah. I love Leonard Skinner. No doubt about that. So I'm reading you're a fourth generation union tradesman. Talk to me about that. Apparently you came from a family of carpenters. Is that right?
Yes, sir. My whole family was, carpenters and millwrights. And I guess, I've been out of school for about a year or two doing what you do when you just get out of school. And, my dad, I was laying carpet at the time, which is, I don't know if you've ever done floor cover or not, but that's not a very good way to make a living, real hard on your body, and I knew I didn't want to do that for the rest of my life.
So, very difficult.
My father came and said that there was opportunity at the iron workers or the carpenters, and he could help me out with either one, but I guess I went for the one that had a little bit more money in it. He'd always been a carpenter. I'd always did carpenter work, you know, with him and my other family members, so I just wanted to try something different. It was definitely the best move I ever made.
So you went to the Union Hall at 477, and that kind of changed your whole life, right?
Absolutely.
It, good.
It gave me I get 2001. Yeah, 2001 is when I joined and started the apprenticeship, and I really never looked back after that. It was just opened my eyes to a whole new world of opportunity, really, and that probably saved my life.
Mm-hmm. And when did you become business manager?
I've been business manager for a little over 5 years now, so I'm on my second term. We get elected or have elections every 3 years. So before that, I've been president and held several different positions throughout the local, and I was the apprenticeship coordinator for about around 5 years. So I kind of gradually just worked my way into these elected positions, and thankfully my membership saw that I was fit to do it and wanted me to do it, so I took the chance and ran.
Good for you. Well, I tell you, I have a lot of respect for the iron workers. I don't know if they told you, but I've been doing the show for the last couple of years at Iron Workers Local 17 in Cleveland, Ohio. Their jurisdiction goes down to Akron, out to Sandusky. They got about 700 active members. And I'll tell you, I learned a lot just doing the show from here. This is a tough occupation. And I'm reading that you work mostly as a welder, turbine, and heavy rigger on hydro powerhouses. And this is all through the Tennessee Valley. Now, talk to me about rigging. I think there's a lot of people that need to be educated on that. I'd like to get your perspective on rigging. Go ahead.
Okay, so, rigging is, I guess, it comes from a trade. We assume that people know what we're talking about whenever we say rigger. But so what a rigger does is works with a crane to either set iron in place to be bolted, welded, whatever the case is. And in my case, we were tearing apart hydro units and then rebuilding them. So, we're hooking the components of some of them weighed 350,000 pounds, and it was a great opportunity getting to see basically the guts of one of these generators that's been in the hole since the 30s, some of them. If some of them the first time they've ever been tore apart, and it was pretty wild. So you take a lot of heavy slings and chokers made out of wire rope or synthetic material, a lot of lifting beam stuff to kind of equalize the load, and you just get up on it. It's some of a slow process because of tight tolerances and whatnot, but it's it was pretty gratifying doing this because it was something that a lot of the membership that we have just didn't get the opportunity to do or see, because a lot of, in my case, is just right place at the right time and getting that right opportunity, to be able to go out and do it. But some of the stuff had been, 50, 60 years since it had seen daylight, and here we are yanking it out to replace it. So, on a construction type job, a rigger is going to be the guy or gal that works with the crane to get the pieces where they got to go. And
right.
A lot of times that can be fast-paced. If you're in a raising gang, you'll be sending up multiple pieces at a time. You could be working with a tower crane, some mobile crane, gantry systems. There's a lot of different, techniques and equipment that can be used to do it.
There's a lot of pieces, parts to it, and we're talking heavy machinery. We're talking a lot of training. Maybe you and I was reading earlier about your training center. It sounds pretty pretty complex, pretty thorough. As far as the training portion of rigging and all that, is that like one of the main items they go over? And I'm thinking maybe you could speak to worker safety and all this, because when you throw in all those moving parts, anything can happen. I'm just wondering how you handle all that in your apprenticeship training.
Well, yeah, it definitely starts with the apprenticeship training. I think our crane and rigging course right now is around 80 hours total. So that every apprentice that come through there, they're going to get that certification. And we're pretty fortunate right now. We've had a lot of work, so we were able to purchase a nice boom truck to where we've actually got something out there on the yard that you know, if we're trying to explain to the apprentices about a certain type of hitch or something like that, we can just go out there and show them, you know. And, you know, you, generally it's not something that you just turn out and go do. It's something that you work your way into, because there's a lot of trust and faith that you know what you're doing whenever you hook up to these big parts. And, you know, in the case of like, well, like construction, I mean, it's the guys that are hanging the steel, they're their life's in your hands a lot of times. If you don't have the right type of stuff to send the pieces up, when they get it, it could slip, it could shift, whatever, and get somebody hurt or killed. So, yeah, it's definitely a serious component of what we do. And, you know, I guess when I started, I started on a night shift and was working with a guy that had done it quite a bit. And, you know, I just kind of took his lead, and then I guess they sent him to another job, and they just said, hey, you want to hang around and do the night shift for us? And it turned into about a 5-year span for me there. So, but it was definitely a different experience that a lot of guys don't get the opportunity to do.
Well, like I thought, there's a lot of components that go into rigging. So what about, maybe we could speak to general terms of your apprenticeship program. How are we doing right now? We have a lot of young members joining right now. What's the status over there, Jeb?
Yes, sir. We've had quite a few major projects in the area, and I guess definitely a construction boom. We've got Huntsville, Alabama in our jurisdiction, and it's been, now it's the largest city in the state of Alabama, and it's one of the fastest growing in the U.S. And we've had enough projects over there to where we've been able to, I guess, open up a lot more recruitment. So I guess 3 years ago, we went from averaging around 20 apprentices across all three periods. We have a 3-year program. So we got up to where we were close to 100. I think now we're around 60, but all 60 of those guys are working, and you know, it's we're steadily improving that. We were able to, I guess, weed through some of the weaker links that maybe couldn't cut it or this wasn't the right trade, and we wound up with a great batch. But it's really all because of the organizing efforts, because a lot of the ones that we selected for our apprenticeship, they may have been working in a welding shop or you know, working as a laborer on some type of construction job, and maybe had a little bit of experience, but definitely weren't journey person material. So, you know, that apprenticeship's just, it's made for somebody like that. They mm-hmm. want to work, and here's the opportunity. So, get them in there, get them tuned up on what they need to know, and then, you know, we've got some great help from it.
So it sounds like they were non-union, and you're bringing them over to the apprenticeship program. Is that kind of what I'm hearing?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Good. We like that. We like that a lot. Jeb Miles on our live line, and he is the business manager of Ironworkers Local 477. They're based in Sheffield, Alabama. We'll talk more with Jeb later in the show. Dave Meginhardt will be joining us on behalf of the United Labor Agency. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
We're the nurses, firefighters, and claims representatives that help keep our government services running. We respond to natural disasters. We care for our nation's veterans, and we investigate discrimination in the workplace. We are federal and D.C. government workers, and we are proud to serve the American people. Working in more than 70 agencies across the government, we know we can fulfill our mission because our union has our back. Learn more at AFGE.org. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy,
and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our Raising Wages agenda, go to aflcio.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And keep in mind, we are available on at least six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. We always appreciate those five-star ratings, so keep them coming. Let's go back to our live line. Joining us from Sheffield, Alabama today is Jeb Miles. Jeb is a business manager at Ironworkers Local 477. They have about 300 active employees. A lot of work down there. You were mentioning Huntsville, Alabama. A lot of work. What's the story over there? Why is everybody so attentive to Huntsville, Alabama right now, Jeb?
Well, a lot of it is the technology and the government over there. They've got which NASA has been there since basically its inception, and there's a lot of we used to do a lot of work for NASA. So now you've got Blue Origin and some of the private firms that have started utilizing the test stands for the rockets and the various stuff that had already been established there in the Huntsville area. And thankfully, we're in a spot where we're able to go in and work on that stuff now with a lot of the government infrastructure money that's coming. It'll be coming to this particular base, and it's looking like we're in line to catch a ton of that work, because it should.
Good.
Majority of it should be project labor agreement work with that with the executive order that Biden signed here a few months ago.
Right. Yeah, it's good to have a union friendly guy in the White House to make sure that unions are taken care of in various states, especially states like Alabama. Well, let's be honest, Alabama, right to work state. I know there's been some organizing going on down there. Are you involved in some of the politics there? Because it's been a red state for a long time. In many cases, unions are a dirty word down there. Jeb, can you speak to that?
Oh, absolutely. They're the state is an anti-union at best. I mean, I'll give you an example of a few years ago, we landed at the time it was going to be the largest manufacturing facility under one roof. And it was a Toyota Mazda conglomerate that had come together there. And the governor and the mayor of the city of Huntsville had actually flew to Japan to carry anti-PLA packets directly from the ABC to the people that were paying to have this thing built. So, I mean, they're going out on an extra limb and spending taxpayer money to go try to keep this from going union as far as construction goes. And I don't know if y'all are familiar with Toyota plants up there where you guys are at, but typically what they do is they will be built by the building trades under project labor agreements, and then of course, the UAW, they fight them tooth and nail to try to keep them out of there to keep the workers from being organized. But historically, the building trades have got that work. So, yeah, they do everything they can. They've had a lot of growth in the state, but a lot of it is low-wage jobs that, may not have benefits or longevity or, like an Amazon type of job that, just a real high turnover rate. And it seems to be that the government hangs their hat on that. We recruit all these jobs, but they don't tell what kind of jobs they are. It's just, look at what we've done. We've got this work. So
yeah,
a lot of stuff we've done in spite of the elected officials and then a lot of it's got to do with the effort on the membership's part to warm up to the maybe the ones that are friendly, because a Democrat's not going to be in office in our area. It's impossible to get them elected, so you basically got to work with what you have, and we've learned that, and we've started building relationships, and it seems to be that's working pretty good. These people know who we are now, so
yeah,
that's a big goal of ours.
I bet that they are pretty fascinated when you explain to these lawmakers, and we're talking ones that are really not union friendly. When you talk to them about your apprenticeship program, that you're self-funded, that you're doing that without any taxpayers' money, that's got to open their eyes, doesn't it?
It does, but it can also be aggravating because, I guess 5 years ago, the state passed a tax incentive for companies that utilize registered apprenticeship programs. So naturally, we as the union trades or anybody with an apprenticeship program thought, okay, this is something we can kind of jump on. Well, what came next was, the big non-union companies, they started their own so-called apprenticeship program. So when we can compare ours to theirs side by side, we knock it out of the park, and it definitely opens their eyes up. And then the fact that the people that we're bringing in on our apprentice program, they're from the community, and generally they stay in the community. They're not typically not traveling with a company to where they're in and out. They're buying houses here, establishing family roots, et cetera. And, that's just money that stays in the community to help progress everything.
Mm-hmm. So, Jeb, you got all this infrastructure money coming in. I don't know what the amount is for Alabama. I know some states are really chomping at the bit right now. I'm just wondering, are you prepared? Is 477 prepared for, you mentioned Huntsville, Alabama, that's one there, but I'm just wondering, this is probably going to go over several years. What's your take on that?
Well, we have, I guess we've got more of a long-term plan that we've got several things we're looking at, but one of them, will probably be, because where we're physically located is about an hour and a half from where you say Huntsville is, where all the work is. So we're actually looking at maybe getting into a building closer over there just to make it easier on that end of it. But we're in a spot right now to where we've got, I'm gonna say, less than 20 guys off. So it's a struggle to keep everything manned up. And when we were building the Toyota project, we were stripping non-union contractors as fast as we could, giving these non-union or unrepresented workers the opportunity. And, there's still a handful of those people out there, but pretty much any of the low-hanging fruit we've already picked over. And, it's going to be tough just to keep everything manned up. And then, throughout the Southeast, work's booming. And I know you had talked to my brother James Cole a couple of months ago from Local 167 over in Memphis. And I mean, they've got a huge, huge project that's breaking ground now, and that's going to draw a lot of help. And that's about 2 hours up the road for us. So it's a good time, but it's a scary time as far as that goes. And then like with the Toyota project, we probably had at peak around 600 iron workers there. And I'm going to say 200 of them were traveling iron workers. That he came just for the work. That's one thing about the trades is they typically step up and, everybody wants to be on the big job. So if Huntsville is where the big job is, it's typically going to be a lot of iron workers that just show up wanting to go to work because that's where the work's at. So
that's right.
We're kind of banking on that, but we do have a bit of a long-term plan to keep organizing in that particular area. And then, And we're still going after new contractors too. So we're trying various things that, some of them work, some of them don't. You just got to get over it, move on to the next thing and hope it works.
There you go. Good attitude there. Jeb, I'm going to leave it on that note. It was a pleasure talking to you. Jeb Miles joining us from Sheffield, Alabama. He's the business manager with Ironworkers 477. Website is ironworkers 477.org. You stay safe, stay strong, and stay in touch. It sounds like things are happening. Hopefully the organizing will continue. Bring those non-union people over to 477, and everybody's going to be happy that way, including you as business manager, okay?
Yes, sir. Hey, we appreciate what y'all are doing.
All right, we're going to take a quick break right now. Dave Meginhart heads the United Labor Agency. He's coming up next on America's Workforce.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number two. Welcome one of our regulars, contributor to America's Workforce and sponsor for many, many years. That would be the United Labor Agency, which is headed by Mr. David Meginhart, who's been executive director for over three decades, 33 years, helping people find the right job. And I'll tell you, there's a lot of job opportunities in Northeastern Ohio. Mr. Meginhart, welcome back to the show. How are we doing today?
I'm doing well. It's good to be back.
Good. Let's talk about, the Regional Transit Authority for one, and also Cuyahoga County government. What's the story on these two?
Right. So with RTA, they're always looking for bus drivers. We work really intensely and closely with them to try to find people that, have their CDL Class B so they can go into careers. But they also have this new category, this new job that they're recruiting for. And it's pretty cool because it's called a transit ambassador. And what the transit ambassador does is they ride the buses. And they monitor activities, they look at reports and data, and see what ridership is like at different lines. And they assist passengers with, fares and all that kind of stuff. So it's really they're truly an ambassador for the transit system. And it pays pretty well. It pays almost $19.58. And of course, you're then working for RTA. They have a good benefit package. And I think it's really, it's really perfect for somebody who's starting their career, who needs that first, good professional job, get some work experience. And then, you're in a really good organization that you can move up with. So that's with RTA. And again, that's just ongoing. They're very motivated to hire. And it's like every other employer, right? They're experiencing the same kind of shortages for workers, and they're definitely motivated to hire right now. Cuyahoga County, it's sort of the same thing. There's many jobs throughout Cuyahoga County that are open. Their highest priority jobs right now are corrections officers, which again, they make good money. They make close to $20 an hour, and social workers, working for Children and Family Services. Again, they're almost always recruiting for these jobs, but I think the pandemic and the people moving about and the Great Resignation, all that stuff has just really exacerbated that problem. They're hard jobs, certainly, and they're hard to fill. But again, I think if you think of it the same way as the RTA job, certainly with the social work job, it's a good place to go to really learn the system, really, if you're interested in social work, you're going to have an intense environment, be paid reasonably well with good benefits, be able to start your career. And I think with the same goes, I think, with the corrections officer too. I mean, you have to be able to be LEED certified. So with no felonies in your past. It's a pretty intense job, right?
Yeah.
But for those who want to do it, I think it's just a really great opportunity. And these jobs are open. They have an immediate sort of, I wouldn't say desperate need, but they have an immediate need right now. And so we really work closely with the county to try to, figure out how best to get, people in front of the HR department. And in the future, in the near future, we haven't settled on a date yet, but we'll be hosting application days so that people can come down to the job center on Carnegie and have staff help them get through the application process and understand what it is that they need to bring. And because, like any other employer, the county has a applicant tracking system in the front, and it can knock people out inadvertently if they aren't prepared for it and they don't bring the right material, or if they don't fill out all of the questions, all those things that can screen you out. So we try to help people get through it and get them in front of HR. So those are two, I think, very immediate, ready to hire, good employers. We were talking with the county HR department, and they have positions in public works. And generally, people in the parks and, they go to do, and they actually help to, they'll pay for a CDL because they often drive larger equipment. So they need people with a CDL. So the county will pay for a CDL. And the HR representative was saying that they used to do one recruitment a year. And generally they would have between 300 and 400 applicants. And then they would just work through that list all year. By the time the year ended, they had got through that and they'd hired everybody. She said now that, they do an application and maybe 50 people will show up. And so they've had to do a lot of recruitments for this too. Again, it's almost the same thing. It's a county job, right? It's a good job. It pays well. And again, if you're, not going to college and you're not sure what you want to do, it's not a bad employer to get hooked up with. So all of these things are available to people right now.
When it comes to government, it's a good idea. And like you said, some of these jobs, they're starting points for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And once you're in the government, I could speak to this because I've been working in the municipal court system for over 20 years. And once you're in there, there's always other opportunities if that one doesn't pan out. But when you're in the middle of it all, it makes it a whole lot easier. But you mentioned HR directors. My sympathy and my salute to all the HR directors listening right now, because with everybody, this great resignation, there's so much going on. I don't even know. They have to have a traffic light in their office because exactly. There's so much going on right now,
There's so much going on. It's just amazing. People taking jobs, working for a couple of weeks, taking another job. It's amazing. It's really, the churn is incredible right now, I think. So hopefully at some point it'll come to the end and it'll be a little more normal and things will settle down. But right now I think we're still in the thick of it.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure a lot of HR directors are suffering from burnout right now. I mean, there's a lot of people suffering from burnout, but that's definitely one occupation that I would personally stay away from. But anyway, you have a virtual career fair coming up on May 19th, and I know you've been doing this, obviously, because with a pandemic, you had no other choice. But so is this something you're going to continue? And maybe you could give us some details on this one.
Yeah, sure. We're definitely going to continue the virtual career fairs. We've had in-person events too. We had one yesterday, which, you know, about 50 people showed up, and we followed all the protocols that we could, because COVID's still percolating around there, and every once in a while people will, come down with it. But we will definitely, because we think about the virtual career fair, it can, you can do it from home. You don't have to worry about parking. You don't have to worry. Our employers love it because they're able to put staff on the virtual career fair because the employers are always live in the career fair. So it saves on travel time for them. The nice thing too is that even though there's a live segment of it, so like it will be live on May 19th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. So that's when the employers are there. And you can chat with them. You go to the booth. You do chat function and all that. And you can apply. The nice thing about it is that it's still open after 2 p.m. So job seekers can still go to the booth, look at all the different applications, and they can apply. They might not be able to talk to an employer, but they'll be able to see all of it. And that's the beauty of it being virtual instead of having a live event, because It's up until we take it down, and we usually take it down at midnight. So it's that entire day somebody can go and look and be able to apply. It's easy to register. There's a link on our website too. The whole flyer's on our website. The flyer is on the Facebook page for Ohio Means Jobs Cleveland Cuyahoga, but it's omjcc.easyvirtualfair.com, and you just register for it, and we even have videos that are linked to it, so that it gives you a little primer about how to navigate it and how to work through the fair. I mean, it's very kind of intuitive and easy, and it's graphic, and it makes it look like it has these avatars. The employers have avatars, and they have these actual virtual booths and all that kind of stuff, so it's kind of fun environment. But it's also, something that really can really be beneficial, because, you can generally we have between 50 to 70 employers that participate every month. We're about 60 for this month, for May 19th event. And, that's, really a great thing. Right. So in a few hours, you're able to look at or talk to that many employers. So it's really worth being able to, just be able to do that. And and again, if you're looking for work, the more employers that you can talk to, the more conversations you can have, the better to understand what's out there and how your skills match with it is good. I mean, it's a lot of people will shy away from interviewing. They're nervous about it. It's the hardest thing for a lot of people to do, but I think as you do it more and as you get better at it, you start to understand, how you can talk about yourself and really what an employer wants to hear, right?
Exactly.
The employer wants a good attitude. They want a smile. They want, to be able to show energy. And, that's hard to do at first, right? But even the virtual environment, it can be a little bit intimidating. But I think it's, we really impress upon people that, they have to talk to a lot of people.
Yeah,
it's not easy finding a job even in this environment, because the employer still wants to make a good match. They still, they still want to make sure that you're going to fit into their culture. So, So it's May 19th, 10 a.m. to 2 for live chat, and then the entire thing is open from 9 a.m. until midnight. So if you log on at 9 a.m., you'll be able to see the jobs, but the employers won't be there. So.
And ulagency.org, that's one way to access it.
Yep.
Okay, good, good. We'll hit it here on the show. All right, Dave, great job as usual. You take care. We'll talk to you in 2 months, okay?
Okay, great. Talk to you then.
All right, that's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, the Minnesota AFL-CIO, and we'll check in with Senator Sherrod Brown. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.